Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello, and welcome to Alive to Thrive, and welcome to the beautiful month of October. The weather is starting to change, the leaves are changing, and it's just absolutely gorgeous outside here in the Midwest. And my guest today is a leader in the Midwest, in Missouri especially. She was elected to the Missouri House of Representatives in 2008. I can't believe it's already been almost, I guess, 5 years, going on six. And she has 20 years' experience in government, community groups, and agencies dedicated to helping Missouri's education and economic development, and has a lot of different passions and interests, and has been a leader with many, many nonprofit organizations. And it's just a delight to welcome State Rep. Ann Zaire to the show. How are you, Ann?
Hi, Brenda. I'm fine. How are you on this gorgeous October day?
Well, I am looking out the window going, I can't wait to get outside, but I'm happy to be in the studio today. And we are thrilled that you were able to be with us. There are so many topics that we want to chat about, and also just about your journey being a woman in politics, and people that inspired you along the way, and, you know, making your transition from, you know, economic development, which is how I first met you, through the Economic Development Center in St. Charles County, through where you are today down in Jefferson City and representing the people of St. Charles. So what inspired you to go into politics? It's certainly not a decision people make lightly, and certainly one that involves a lot of decision-making, and a lot of factors go into that process. So what inspired you?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, everybody has a calling for something, and if you can find your avocation, I think, you know, we become the person that we're meant to be in this world. But I always liked history and government, even when I was a kid. And I think I got most interested in it when I realized that it was one of the foundations of our society. And it's kind of how we, you know, we have these rules that we all say, okay, we agree, we're going to live under these rules so we can all live together and work well and play well. And, you know, that was, that kind of evolved into, gosh, I've had such a blessing of different experiences, you know, anywhere from, like you said, the Economic Development Council in St. Charles County to I worked for the county executive in St. Charles County doing public policy for him for 7 or 8 years, to working in the St. Charles City Police Department as the neighborhood watch person and victims assistance person, to working at Lindenwood University, a private university where I still teach, and healthcare. So I've had but I'm old. I'm almost 60.
You're not
so
old.
I've had plenty
timeless
of time, you know, to have those experiences. What a great life I've been having, and I wouldn't change this job for anything. But the reason I ran for office, I always wanted to run for office, even when my kids were little, and they are in their late 20s now. And I decided to wait until they were grown. You know, in my family, we always had to work. I always had to work. And so I decided to stay local and get jobs locally so I could be home with the kids to go to games. And, you know, I just thought mom should be there. So they grew up, and the seat opened for what used to be District 18 in St. Charles City. And I ran for it, and by golly, I won. And it's the best job I've ever had because I used to be an aide for everybody else, you know, worked for a few elected officials. I was a congressional aide for a while in the early 90s. And I was always having to express their opinion rather than mine. And that, I think, is a tougher job. And when I now that I have a chance to express my own opinion and make the public policy that I feel is right and just and good for my district, it's the most fulfilling job I've ever had.
Oh, that is fascinating. Now, back in the 60s, when you and I were probably both growing up, roughly the late 60s, 70s, do you recall, like, your earliest impressions of women in politics, like any woman that impressed you that you heard about on television or, you know, either a first lady or elected official of some sort?
That's a really good question. My first recollection of a woman in business or anything was the weather girl, the weather lady on one of the local St. Louis stations. Diane White was her name. And I thought, my goodness, women can work outside the home because my mom was always at home and my dad insisted that my mom be home. And you know what mom told me? She said, Anne, when you get to high school, take a typing class because you need to have some sort of skill if your husband dies.
Wow. You need a plan B.
Yeah, that's plan B, yeah. But I always wanted, my very first recollection was probably Harriet Woods was lieutenant governor way back in the day that I was really impressed that here is a very intelligent woman who took herself seriously. And you know what? If she took herself seriously, people listened to her.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've always admired strong, confident women who are comfortable with their own power and yet they can be feminine as well. So I've always been attracted
to
that kind of...
Exactly. I was just going to say, how can we encourage other women, whether they're moms or career women or both, you know, women wear many hats these days, that caring for their families and working outside the home. How can we encourage more women to go into politics locally and have their voices heard?
I teach American government class at Lindenwood, and these are young people who... some of them really don't want to take a political science class because they hate politics. They hate, you know, they just hate the idea. So my goal is to, for the course, they got to learn a couple things, but my goal is to have them not be afraid of politics anymore because all it is just the fear of the unknown. So I encourage these young people that we are just elected people are people who signed their name on the dotted line and decided to run for office. And we're willing to take a chance, and you know, you take that chance that you could lose, but you also take that very, very good chance that you can win. And I think sometimes women are afraid to lose. And if you don't take that chance, you're never going to get there. But I would encourage women to get involved in their kids' schools, like the PTO or the PTA. Go get elected to city council. There's lots of boards on the local level, commissions that can mayors appoint people to volunteers, and you kind of get your experience in the process that way and kind of learn the ropes of how city government works or run for your county council, volunteer for some of the commissions there. So there's a lot of ways that you can expose yourself. Get involved with a campaign, a political campaign, something you care about, either a cause or a person. You don't have to run the show, but you just got to show up, maybe even, you know, stuff some envelopes or go knock door to door or something, but it kind of gets you exposed to the process, and it's good for kids, too. They learn how to, I hate to say this, but work a room, you know? Mm-hmm. They see mom being outgoing and take it seriously, and that's a real good role model for kids. That people can, their mom takes themselves, herself seriously, and people listen to what they have to say.
Well, it's interesting, you know, when you were speaking, because I was thinking I took those cues from my mom. She did a little bit of volunteer work before she unfortunately got divorced later in life, but I volunteered on a lot of political campaigns in high school and in college.
And then I did an internship in my junior year in college, and I got to go to Washington, D.C., and I think that experience really showed me exactly what you were saying about, you know, politicians and people in elected office are no different than you, me, and the person next door. They're just people willing to step out and represent their neighbors, their fellow, you know, citizens of their town or their community. And, you know, the impact that people can have on their local government is amazing, and even national government. But I think so often people that are so discouraged by what they may hear on the news or the negative strife or the stereotype of, you know, the political battles, whichever direction they're going in, depending on the weather and depending on the day, but that you can have such an impact on your elected official if you just pick up the phone and call them. And that's something, you know, we can talk about later in the program if, when we start talking about some of the issues that you're passionate around, like mental health issues and some of the bills that have been coming before the state legislature, like around bullying, for example. And those are issues that people need to really speak up and call their state representative, call their congressperson, and really let their feelings be known, because I think a lot of times people do not take the time, but maybe with social media, maybe they can communicate easier now. But let's talk about your leadership training. You've participated in so many leadership programs, Leadership Missouri, Leadership St. Louis, Vision West St. Charles County, and then the Harvard University Local Government Leadership Program at the Kennedy School of Government. That is so awesome. What aspect of leadership are you passionate about, and what are some of the topics that you studied in all these leadership programs?
Well, on the local level, the leadership programs like Leadership St. Louis and Leadership St. Charles are local issues. I would encourage anybody to get involved in those because they and it's cheap. It's really cheap to do so, but it's over a period of 8 or 9 months. And some of the format is every weekend you spend a couple days in education around the St. Louis area or the St. Charles area or healthcare or social services or transportation. So you really get exposed to a number of different policy areas, and it can only help a person get a more global perspective of what's going on and how, you know, nothing is a microcosm. You know, everything is relative to everything else around. And the Harvard Kennedy School of Government, that was a transformational program for me. What it did, it was a Socratic method, so they kind of nailed you down, you know, to your opinion. And I think they really stripped me down to take away all my defenses as far as, well, in my insecurities. And I found, oh, my word, there is a leader in here. There's a leader in me. And then I began to believe it. And it was transformational in my life, that I've never been the same since. But in each of those leadership programs, just getting a global perspective and you just begin to know that you matter, that everybody matters as far as an opinion goes. You know, when the kids were little, their friends would come over and, you know, you just pull up the other chair and feed the kids, the neighborhood kids. And something as simple as I'd ask them, do you want milk or water? Well, I don't care. And I'd always say, no, you have to have an opinion. You have to have an opinion in this house. And my kids grew up with that you have to have an opinion. And I think I did a pretty good job, because I have one very conservative son, I have one very liberal son, and I have kind of a liberal, almost libertarian daughter. So it's great. You know, they are themselves. And I didn't make them fit into any mold. I just made them aware, and that they can make a difference.
I love that. And I love that you inspired them to, you know, be able to formulate their own opinion, trust their inner guidance, their inner wisdom, and
be comfortable with that no matter what that is. I mean, I always say, you know, I respect any political opinion as long as people have an opinion and you know, take pride in
yeah.
expressing it. I mean, I will have friends from a variety of political parties that, you know, if they're participating in the process, it's the people that sit on the sidelines and complain and then don't do
mm-hmm.
anything to be part of the solution. And I think we all have a
yeah.
role to be part of the solution and not part of the problem. So
yeah, you're so right.
Go ahead.
You're absolutely right. And I was going to say something about, I lost my thought. I was going to say something about getting involved and running for office, but if I remember it, I'll say it again.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, to take that a step further, you know, you had a lot of experience running and being serving on various community boards and the Salvation Army and, you know, the Parks and Rec District and various things. And I think, first of all, those experiences help a person develop diplomacy, help manage a conflict, negotiation, differences of opinion. I have served on many boards, and there are, you know, always a lot of different opinions, and you have to come to consensus and or compromise or give a little of your position to understand the other person's position. And that comes in handy, for sure, to be successful in politics. And I do want to commend you on becoming Freshman Legislator of the Year. That is so awesome. Way to go.
Oh, thank you. Thank
Whoa.
You. Thank you very much.
That was back in 2008?
Yeah.
That you got
yeah.
that in 2008?
Just, you know, for doing the hard work that that it takes to get it done. And, you know, you mentioned compromise, and I think that's a really, really good point to make here. It is about compromise, and it's not all about screaming and yelling and digging our heels in the sand. And just the other day I posted on my Facebook page, it's not dysfunctional government, it's dysfunctional politics. Because I don't think you can mm-hmm. be in the political game unless you play that game. But it can be done with integrity. And, you know, when people are see from the outside politicians accusing each other and being snarky and mean and hateful, it doesn't have to be that way when you're elected.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never hear me saying negative things. People pick those fights publicly for the attention, for the sound bites, and where most of us are down in the trenches working in our committees, working with our colleagues on both sides of the aisle and the other chamber to get some real legislation passed. So
mm-hmm.
Most you don't have to. You know, you're not going to automatically get in the spotlight and be, you know, slandered or hit or anything like that politically. So,
well,
I want
it,
people
it
to know
does
that.
Seem, yeah, it does like sort of remind me of the mean kids on the school playground, the bullies, you know, trying to like
yeah.
Make their points across. And I think there is a different way to, you know, the history of politics in this country, you know. Is eloquence and speaking and skill at
mm-hmm.
debate and bringing you know a sense of rational. But let's get part back to we were talking about being part of the solution and the experience that one can gain from local community service, volunteerism.
Mm-hmm.
You were able to do that on a local level for many years. Did that come in handy later on when you ran for office, that you
it
had
really,
this experience?
You know what? Yes, it really did. First, I had a base, you know, that of people who knew my interests and my talents and abilities. Those abilities were honed by learning how to work and develop a functional board of directors to actually make it set a direction and set some goals and get there. And then when I got into the state office, and I became chair. Well, first I was chair of tourism. I was the first freshman in my class to become a chair. Yay!
Yay.
And then I was chair of economic development, and that's where I am now. But serving on a board of directors really gave me the experience on handling a group of people and a meeting, and you know, controlling the ebb and flow, and realizing that. You know, I'm just a traffic cop as chair. I I want to make sure everybody gets heard and everybody's happy and everybody gets a chance to express their opinion and put forth an idea. We can talk about it. The group can accept it or not. So those local boards were very important for building on my expertise in that area.
Wow, that is interesting too about the ability to run a good meeting. And I've sat in meetings where they go off the agenda, they never keep to time, and
mm-hmm.
or someone's opinion doesn't get expressed, and then they leave with a resentment, which grows bigger. So all that those skills at developing and working with people of a variety of types. Certainly came into handy for you. So let's talk about when you first got to Jefferson City. What was that like? Take us back to 2008, going down
mm-hmm.
and seeing your office for the first time and getting sworn in and all that.
And this, when we were sworn in, we got our office, and it was a dream. And it was a dream that I'd had for 20-plus years, and Through my own hard work, I was able to get there, and thankfully the voters believed in what I believe in. But then when that swearing-in ceremony on the House floor, and we all raised our hands and swore to uphold the Missouri Constitution, that was one of the most moving points in my life. I mean, there wasn't a dry eye in the House. We were all so darn proud to represent Missouri, our constituency, and to actually we're playing a part in the future of Missouri. And I'm sorry to go back, but with the Salvation Army, with the RSVP, the Retired Senior Volunteer Program, with other boards, social boards that I've worked with, because I did that, I understood their needs and I understood what their missions were. And that helped me so much in Jefferson City because I also sit on appropriations for health, mental health, and social services. And so I knew the needs and how important funding for people who cannot do it themselves is for people.
And so important in this, in the last few years, we've seen some really tough budget cuts and tough decisions that have had to be made.
Mm-hmm.
And so you were, you can be that voice to say, look, I've been on these boards. They're not wasting the money. They're stretching a penny further than anybody can ever stretch a penny. And it's a combination of state support and individual donations and things to keep some of these places running and to provide the services, especially, mental health services. I mean, this has been a big issue. I know I used to work at Bridgeway, and the funding we got from the state was so critical. And we've seen some very high-profile crimes and situations lately in Washington, D.C., with mental health issues, at the core. And so sad to see people just, basically being shot and killed. And that there's got to be, especially with yesterday with this mom and her child in the car. And I've lived in D.C. for a long, 14 years. I know exactly where all this took place. And it's just, I can't imagine what's ahead for that poor child, the 18-month-old child. But when I read a brief little story today saying that this woman had taken a bad fall a couple of years ago, and it said to me that probably she had a head injury, which often goes undiagnosed, and head injuries trigger a whole bunch of other mental health issues. Let's talk about the mental health issues. What has come before you in the state legislature in the last few years, and where have you made an impact?
During my time in appropriations for ESPO, I requested that right off because one of my dreams is to have affordable mental health care available for anybody who needs it. I was a young woman, and I didn't have any insurance, and I was at a time in my life where I needed some assistance, some mental health services, and I couldn't get it. I walked into Kreider Center for Mental Health, asking, could I get some help? And they had such a long waiting list that there was no way. And if I had been suicidal, I guess if I would, I could have gotten services. But we should nip it in the bud before it gets there. We should, mm-hmm. as a society, decide to help people and get the help for them that they need. And yeah, this gal took a bad fall, and the chemistry changes in the brain after something like that. But either it's probably a combination of her immediate people around her didn't really realize that that this type of accident could have this kind of effect. And the fact that we don't have those services available, I think we cut off our nose to spite our face that we only provide services for the most acutely mentally ill. And you know, so many health problems, so many societal problems could be solved. So many with a crime, if we just did a better job of providing mental health services for people. So during my time, I've always tried to put more money into the appropriation for mental health. And this past year, we got it done, 10 more million.
Awesome.
Yeah, well, yeah. And I'm going to do it again this year.
Awesome. Well, let me know how I can help in that area. That is one of my passionate issues. And something I never talked about all my life was that I had a sister that had a mental health issue. And what I witnessed over 20 years with her is that people become part of a system that doesn't really encourage independence. You know, there's a lot of medication with often if someone gets in that system, and it's predominantly women in the system, and it's hard. You know, they don't really encourage a lot of healthy nutritional choices or exercise, and it's just sort of a cookie cutter approach, and instead of a holistic approach to the person. And I really want to commend you, Anne, for sharing that at one time in your life you saw counseling, because I think, you know, most people, if they're honest enough, when you talk to them, probably 9 out of 10 people. I mean, most of my friends have been at one time or another, you know, life can send some curveballs. And whether it's a family loss through a death, or it could be a loss of a job or an injury. I mean, things come up where people need counseling and access to counseling. And so some of the things, can you talk a little bit about what some people can do on a very personal level if they witness someone being depressed or talking about suicide? Or, you know, I think so many times people sort of say, I don't want to get involved. But then they don't get involved and something happens. That, you know, maybe if they said, here's a phone number, call this phone number, or I'll take you to this appointment, I'll drive you. I mean, what are some things that you can recommend that people can do?
Well, I think, Brenda, you've said it right there as much as anything, is recognize it and reach out to the person. Sometimes just, how are you doing today? You know, because when people are really depressed, they don't want to reach out to people. They don't want to, they're in their cocoon, and it takes someone from the outside actually touching them emotionally, or even a touch on the arm or something like that to start. And like somebody cares that they're alive. And then, yes, let me make that phone call for you. Let me give you the number. Let me help you get to this place and get some resources for you. And I think that's the first thing. But somebody cares that they're alive, I think, is such an important thing.
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. And I have actually seen a planned suicide avoided because someone wrote them a letter and reached out and showed they cared. Being part of this, I won't go into it any further, but to emphasize your point. And I think that state legislators and elected officials at all levels need to hear from their constituents. So, for example, when someone like yourself is presenting a bill, how much does that help to hear from people in your office or have other your colleagues hearing from people? Tell us about the impact that people can have.
Oh, my goodness. It helps so much. And now in the days of email, it's just write the email. Give us a personal story, but encourage us. Give us some input because we have plenty of people who are saying no, no, no. But we need people to kind of give us reinforcement that we're doing the right thing. And, yes, this is the right thing to do. And personal stories always help that we can say something on the House floor or the Senate floor or, you know, if they hear part of a bill that could be made a little bit better, then that if that constituent would call or write us and suggest that, you know, we're not deep in everything, you know. We're just kind of people making some laws, and we need help with from the people who are really knowledgeable about the subject.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Well, we're going to take a short break, just a station identification and a PSA, a couple announcements, and we'll be right back with State Rep Ann Zaire. We're talking today on Alive to Thrive with State Representative Ann Zaire of Missouri. We'll be right back. You're listening to Blog Talk Radio. Thank you so much. We'll be right back.
Hey, what's up? Holla at your boy. XOXOXO. You getting these texts? Question mark. Where are you? What are you doing? OMG, you are making me mad. You better text me back. I'm waiting outside your house.
Relentless, aggressive texting is like sending an angry robot to deliver your message. When does the robot become dangerous? Let us know at thatsnotcool.com.
Thatsnotcool.com.
Brought to you by the Ad Council.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com. You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Frazier on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
At the station break time, I also want to point out there's a new Etsy shop. I'm going to do a little self-promotion here. Etsy.com/shop/butterflyandmoon. And there you'll find some handcrafted jewelry by two Missourian women, myself being one of those two. Further self-promotion here, if you go to rawartist.org, rawartist.org, and register, you have to register on that site. It's a nonprofit that has 81 or more events around the country promoting independent artists through fashion, performing arts, visual arts. And so if you register there, then they'll send you a confirmation email and you confirm your email address. Then you can go back to rawartist.org/butterflyandmoon and vote. So sorry about the little self-promotion there, but do want to get that out there because there are some very interesting artists here in Missouri that are that were part of a recent showcase that are hoping to go on to the semifinals and ultimately the finals in Los Angeles in January. So we're talking today with State Representative Ann Zaire, who has been in the Missouri House of Representatives since 2008. And we were talking a little bit with Ann before the break about some of the issues she's passionate about. We were talking about mental health issues. One of my top issues that I have had direct experience with in my family. And, you know, the other issue that the state representative Ann Zaire has worked hard on is tourism. And in this economy, you know, we want to talk about the importance of tourism to our state and local governments. And I know there's been such big efforts here in Missouri to revitalize tourism, certainly around the National Monument with the Arch, with all the beautiful areas. I live out in the wine country area, and we have, you know, some historic places here in Missouri as well. So what's been going on in tourism in the state, Ann?
Well, we sure can appreciate in Missouri how important tourism is. It's probably the top one, two, or three industries in the state of Missouri. For every dollar that, and I'm speaking of Missouri government, I guess, now, but for every dollar we put into tourism, the return is $6 in the forms of visiting, spending money while you're there, traveling to it, the overnight stays. And we have stuff to see for people to visit all over the state. You know, we're kind of one of those states that we have a number of different areas of in tourism that can be enjoyed by people. So I'm a big promoter of, you know, let's get people to work, and one of the ways to do that is to promote tourism and continue to let other people know outside the state and within the state what we
have.
So have
you been?
Because we've got some jewels.
Yeah. So have you been on the road a lot in the last few years, discovering different hidden treasures? Of course, everyone knows about Branson,
you know,
and all the wonderful entertainment there, but what are some other parts of Missouri that people may not know about?
Well, of course, Kansas City is fun for, it's kind of a vibrant city, you know, it's, my son lives there right now, he's in law school at UMKC, and he really loves, young people love Kansas City, the plaza there, and you know, at Christmas time, all the lights and things like that. And, of course, the streams that you can float in Missouri. We even have, my gosh, down in, was it Valley Park, or around Hidden Valley ski thing. We have skiing in the winter, you know. And if you take a back road, you'll always find a great little inn or restaurant, you know, that with this special pie or something like that. So you just got to get off the main road, and we still have some beautiful hilly areas, you know, by the Lake of the Ozarks and southwest Missouri. It's and then we have all the agriculture in the Boot Heel, and the culture there, it's some of it's, you know, lots of antique stores, a throwback to kind of simpler days, I guess. And, yeah, you know, as much as anything for the last 2 years, I've really tried to just pump some money into it because I know the return. And I'm so thrilled. You mentioned the Gateway Arch. I'm so thrilled that City River Arch Project, isn't that what it is getting started. And, you know, that walkway.
Well,
over,
and with the... Yeah, and then with the history, the 250th anniversary of St. Louis, and I want to encourage people to go to stl250.com and check out all the things that are coming up next year for the celebration of St. Louis's 250th anniversary. We'll be having the executive director of that, Aaron Buddy, on the program at the beginning of January to kick off 2014. Their big event will be Valentine's Day weekend with the Missouri History Museum, lots of things happening, but there'll be events posted, and people that are hosting events can post on their website. So there's going to be a big focus on tourism coming up with this 250th anniversary. And you mentioned antiques. I love that about Missouri. I moved here 9 years ago, not knowing very much about the state. And at first, quite honestly, I was in a little bit of a culture shock, having come from the East Coast, where I grew up, and living in the big city in Washington, and then I lived in Denver. And I came to Missouri, and I was like, oh, my goodness. But the first thing that impressed me was St. Charles and the beautiful historic Main Street, the cobblestone sidewalks, the river, and all the shops, and I just fell in love with historic St. Charles, which is the area you represent. So lucky for you. And
lucky been a, us, right.
Lucky us. And, you know, there was so much effort on behalf of people like Nadine Boone and the mayors in the last few years to improve St. Charles' image as an art destination and the Foundry.
Yes.
And the Mosaic Art Festival and all the wonderful festivals that they have. They just had Oktoberfest there, I think, about a week ago. But
mm-hmm.
a lot of people still don't realize the gem that St. Charles is. Can you talk a little
mm-hmm.
bit about your hometown?
Goodness, you're right. Main Street, St. Charles, it's, you know, the tourism up and down Main Street is probably one of the biggest revenue drivers that we have in the St. Charles area. And then I was really pleased that Ameristar Casino, when it came in, it worked. The company worked very hard to help St. Charles maintain its historic integrity, and I
mm-hmm.
think they've done a very good job doing that. But
and you almost don't even know it's there unless you go there.
Yeah,
it doesn't seem
That's right.
to interfere with the historic nature of just a few blocks away. You have all these little shops. You would never know that there's a casino within a mile. It's in a whole other world when you walk into the casino. It's, you know, you have the best of both worlds. You have the modern and the splashy and the flashy. And, you know, I know they've hosted Fashion Week with Streetscape Magazine in the past. And then you have, you know, the quaint and the ice cream shops and all the Lewis
yeah.
and Clark history.
And, you know, you can have, there's a lot of good restaurants down on the north end and all the wonderful shops on more the south end. There's some bed and breakfasts. And people come and you can just see them relax as they walk down the street. It's like time slows down there, down on Main Street. And, you know, I didn't mention parks. Great Rivers Greenway, the
mm-hmm.
three-county board that is establishing a system of greenways, parks, and trails around the St. Louis region. This is going to be a garden region when it's fully built out, because it's a whole river ring celebrating the river, the rivers, the confluence of two of the greatest rivers in the world, and greenways along the bike and walk paths. There's going to be trailheads. They're building out in St. Charles, you know, in St. Louis County and St. Louis City. And one day we'll be able to get on our bikes, if we can do it that many miles, but we'll be able to get on our bikes in western St. Charles County and bike continuously all the way across the river into St. Charles County, and then even go into, wind up at the Merrimack River. That it will be that interconnected, and it's taxpayer money. It's supported by a 1/10 cent sales tax that was passed in 2000. So it's a guaranteed revenue stream. And I'll tell you what, with bringing new industries and new high tech industries into the state of Missouri and particularly the St. Louis region, that's what people are looking for now, are quality of life issues. And when we have these gems of parks and trail system interconnected, and, you know, the city, the vibrant city on like Washington Avenue in St. Louis, and the casinos and Main Street St. Charles, it's charming, Creve Coeur Park, where people can canoe and keel. What is that? The Harvard Row Team. What is that?
The Harbor. I'm,
you know,
sorry,
they,
what was the question?
When people have the long boats and, you know, it's
the ferries. You mean the cargo?
No, like it's a team that rows, and it's an Olympic
crew
sport.
The crew team. The crew. You mean like a
you know, it's like a canoe, crew. And they all row in unison, and somebody,
I know,
one of your listeners
of
will know, and one of your listeners
yeah.
is going, it's. Can't you girls get that?
The head of the Charles in Boston has that every year, so we're going to start having that as well.
Well, Creve Coeur Lake, the team works out. Wash U's team uses Creve Coeur Lake to practice. rowing. So
yes,
a row team.
Rowing. That's what it's called. Row team. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like the
okay.
head of the child. Okay. Very good. Yeah. And
yeah.
Greenway.
Yeah.
I want to give out that website, greenriversgreenway.org. Susan Trautman, the director of that, was just at the TEDx event a few weeks ago and gave a wonderful presentation, and I'm hoping to have her on the program as well. And other aspects of the state, certainly right also in St. Charles, is the Lindenwood Performing Arts, the Scheidegger Performing Arts facility with top entertainment. I saw Liza Minnelli there, and who is the Jerry, the guy that just died, the musician that wrote all those musicals. Anyway, they broadcast on public television. And so they have national
and
known talent
coming Campbell,
through there.
They have top names there. And, you know, Lindenwood University campus it's always been gorgeous, but now it's so expansive. It's so big and so wonderful. They've built the buildings in the same motif as the original ones. And I think there's a total, Brenda, of 15,000 students, you know, day and night students attending Lindenwood University, getting a good education. And they're bringing a lot of sales tax dollars in because the students spend a lot of money when they are away at school, and they're good kids.
And we hope they stay. We hope those graduates of all the colleges here in Missouri stay and not move out of state, and we hope that we can have positive working environments and positive policies that encourage a diverse workforce. And, you know, one of your passionate issues is the economic development aspect of the state. So what kinds of companies are you trying to attract to come here? We have the MasterCard headquarters actually just down the road from where our studios are, and we have a lot of major companies here based. Of course, Boeing has a big plant. But offices, what are other companies that you're looking to bring to Missouri?
Well, we're looking, you know, we've invested in, the state has invested in research, life sciences, biosciences, high technology, high tech manufacturing, and those are the companies that we want to attract. Those are the good paying jobs. Research, WashU, we have a great research at Mizzou system. Really does a lot of good, strong, solid research, and we want to build on that. So we're looking for those types of companies that want to start or relocate in Missouri and keep the ones that are here. And another, you know, there's a billions of dollars industry, the data storage industry, sort of like MasterCard, and that's, you know, that's where everybody, all our information is stored in the data storage, and it has to be very secure, of course, both as a building that's very secure and the, you know, the electronic part of it very secure. And we want to attract those types of businesses, too, because those are good-paying jobs, and it's only going to get bigger. So, and why wouldn't we take full advantage of our location in this part of the country, in the Missouri and more specifically the St. Louis region, that we have this, you know, a confluence of the two rivers, like we said, but a transcontinental highway that runs right across Missouri, and we have a centrally located airport. So I'd really like to attract more global business, specifically exports of, you know, Missouri and Midwest products. And I think we can do that, and we've tried to get that bill passed a couple years now, and there's a little bit of politicking about, you know, the Senate wants something else other than that, but we'll keep tweaking it, we'll keep pushing for it, and because these are industries that haven't gone away in the 3 or 4 years that I know that we've worked on trying to get these bills passed, the demand is still there. So I think we're right. And what we want to do is, just like you said, Brenda, is the kids that grow up and go to college, we want them to stay here in Missouri and have a future.
And so in terms of economic development, has our economy been growing or certain counties? What counties are doing better in terms of economic growth?
You know, I haven't seen the chart in a little bit, you know, a couple months. but I understand that our revenue is up just a smidge in Missouri over what it was last year. And, you know, it might even be a percentage point, which in this economy is real good, you know. And I would imagine everybody's taken a little hit, but Kansas City.
It's going in the right direction. I said it's going in the right direction instead of the other direction.
It is. It really is. And we all know that we have to, you know, private sector knows that they have to work hard and leaner and meaner. And I, just this summer, there's a group of investors in St. Louis that pooled their money, and they're going to award grants for startup, their early start companies in high technology sector. You know, people have a lot of ideas, but a lot of times they don't have the investment or the revenue and the resources to make it happen. And I just read the other day that there were four $100,000 grants awarded to four early stage companies that in the St. Louis area. They kind of are there in an incubator called T-Rex in the city of St. Louis. And these are the industries that are going to explode in the future, high technology, you know?
I'm
very pleased that the private sector is stepping up. They know, and the RCGA was involved in funding some of that as well.
And I think I just saw something on your Facebook posting about that seed investment for early stage companies, and that was an article that was in the STL today. So, you know, appreciate that people can contact you through Facebook, and do want to encourage people to contact Anne. It's A-N-N-E. York is her middle name. And Zerr, and Z-E-R-R. And on the state legislature website, you can contact any of your state reps through the state legislature website. Their phone numbers are there, their email addresses, and it's so important to communicate your thoughts on local issues. If you're contacting a state representative, state issue, that they can have impact and represent you appropriately. I did want to touch upon, before we wrap up, it's gone so quickly here, about the motion picture industry. So exciting to see someone like John Hamm on Mad Men, and knowing that he's from Missouri. But what's happening with the motion picture industry? Is it growing? Are people starting to realize they can make movies here for much cheaper than they can in other places? And what's happening there?
Well, you know, they are. There's a demand here in the Midwest. Several years ago, when I was at the police department, I had my own crime reenactment show, and I directed it. I was the talent. I scripted it, and so I produced it. And then I met some filmmakers, and there is such a need for bringing that industry here in Missouri, because typically, you know, you got to go to the West Coast or the East Coast to actually get into the film industry. So there's a need here, and there's a lot of talent in the Midwest. So we have a tax credit, the film tax credit, that it's a modest one. I think it's at $10 million a year now. But, you know, the return is, I think it's five or six-fold, you know, and just work for the actors. If the movie is here, there have been two or three movies produced, Hollywood movies produced in St. Charles City. You know,
Which one?
On Main Street.
Tell us?
I think one was Huck Finn several years ago, and I don't remember the other two, but there is I got a call last session from a producer that was looking to film in Missouri and wanted to know the future of the film tax credit. Well, we're trying to get it reauthorized, because Hollywood is looking for those that help. And other states have a lot of help that they offer movie production, and we're missing out on that business because it puts us on the map, up in the air, St. Louis. George Clooney.
I don't know. Did you ever meet George Hickenlooper, who was involved in the movie industry? He was related by, I don't know if it was the uncle of John Hickenlooper, who's the state governor of Colorado. But George Hickenlooper, unfortunately, is no longer living, but he was affiliated with Lindenwood, and I don't know if you had ever met him. But so we hope to see that happen, and let us know how we can help you advance that mission. What other committees do you serve on? We have just about 5 minutes left to our program, but you are doing some other interesting things, and I wanted to talk about the anti-bullying bill. I'm going to have you on with State Rep Sue Allen, I believe, is also working on that issue with you. I just ran into her the other day, but can we talk a little bit about that bullying bill, or what other issues did you want to
touch on? Yeah, let's do that, because people can go to my website and see the other committees I'm on, you know.
Okay.
But we do need to protect kids, and it's I had no idea that it was as significant a problem as it is. And it's in all kinds of areas, whether a kid is too heavy, too dark-haired, to, you know, whether the kid is gay or whatever the kid identifies as in a gender. These kids, I mean, it is traumatic for kids. And we need to put in protections that empower the school district and give them some power to help protect the kids. And I think parents would appreciate that as well.
So what can people do to help get, is it House Bill 134? Is that the
bill
number?
Well, that wasn't last year, but, you know, another year it'll be a different bill number, you know.
Oh, okay.
And I've talked to Sue, too, and we've been working on language. You know, Senator Jolie Justice is just such a wonderful legislator. She has great ideas on good language to put in the bill that protects the kids. And, you know, Sue said all kids need to be protected no matter what. And I believe that some school districts put enumerated, what am I trying to say, you know, delineated.
Oh, boy. Are you kidding me?
You know,
some
districts say you can't, you know, bully somebody because they are, you know, because of their sexualities, what boy or girl, you know, tall or thin or short or whatever. And I guess it's enumerated powers, but anyway, we can at least.
Spelling it out, which is good.
Yeah.
I mean, I just had a family member in Indiana who lost a nephew. Committed suicide because he was bullied.
Oh.
And this is my niece by marriage, my nephew's wife, and she comes from a pretty conservative family with some very strong religious views, and the son felt, this young boy was bullied at school, and there was, questions around his identity, and you know, that's an unnecessary death. A kid shouldn't have to feel so unloved and so ashamed of any. I mean, kids just need to go to school and learn and focus on learning. And kids can be really mean these days. And I don't know where that's all coming from, if it's, you know, encouraged on some TV programming or movies, or I don't know where it's coming from, but it needs to stop. And these suicides that kids are, I was up in the Anacook School District up in Minnesota, where there were nine kids had committed suicide over a course of a year and a half because of the school policy that did not protect kids. Well, we're wrapping up here with State Rep Ann Zayer. We have lots more to talk with her. We're going to have her on again next session in the spring to see how things are progressing in tourism, mental health, and her anti-bullying bill that she's trying to get through the state legislature. So thank you so much for everything you're doing on behalf of Missouri.
Thank you, Brenda. This has been delightful. Have a great day.
Thank you. And we'll encourage people to find you on the Internet, Facebook, and on her social media site. So thanks, everyone. We'll be back next Friday, October 11th. My guest is Jill Sabul, calling in from Denver, Colorado. She's a singer. She's written and performed many songs, has several CDs out. So tune in with us next week. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great weekend.